Hey Alex, a lawyer and a financial advisor walk into a bar.
No, and then what happens, Dave?
Well, the question is, oh my God, I've got this really difficult employee. How do you reckon I should manage it?
Oh, no. I don't like to swear on these podcasts, but I can tell you if there's one, the most frustrating thing I've probably had in my career, and I think a lot of business owners, you know, it's either that one person or that, you know, they're consistently difficult. I mean, I've got some clients who got, you know, 250, 300 employees. And if you've got 300 people, you know, you're bound to have one who's difficult. Yeah, that's right. And you might have, you know, you might have 20. So, and it really sticks in people's craw. How do you manage that difficult person who can be quite toxic?
Yep.
Who can be, you know, I've had some, in fact, probably the ones that I struggle with the most were quite charming. So I'd go to, you know, to talk to them and say, look, your performance isn't where it should be and you can't be rude to so-and-so or whatever. And then you'd walk away saying, oh, well, that was good. They said all the right things. And then you sort of realise, oh, hang on, I didn't discipline them at all. I think they just talked me out of it. And I've walked away thinking I've done something and I haven't. So it's quite hard when they're nice. But otherwise, I mean, they can be quite, you know, quite aggressive and sometimes intimidating to you.
But I also think, I reckon it's really hard, you know, managing a difficult employee when you've got it in a small team.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Because it can, I mean, it just destroy everything. If you're talking, you know, your team's only five or six or, you know, even 15 and you've got that one person that can, you know, even, you know, when you go to a party and there's that one person who everyone, you know, is difficult, it just ruins the whole party because they're, you know, they monopolise everything.
Is that a reflection upon yourself in some parties, Alex?
I'm that guy. I always have a great time.
You're that idiot standing in the corner dancing like a madman.
Yeah, and talking over everyone and interrupting and not listening. You know, those people who, yeah, they ask you a question and then you're telling them the answer and they don't even listen. They just ask you another question.
Or they revert it around and say, oh, did I tell you about me?
Yeah. Let me tell you more about me. Yeah. And you're like, this is my name. And then the topic changes. So, yeah.
But also, this whole question, I mean, again, the topic today is about managing difficult employees. The challenge is that legal component because of the warnings and if someone's doing this and you can't say that to me and I'm allowed to do this and this is my rights. And it's like it's a really difficult scenario to have an employee that kind of knows the rules themselves and they push it to the limit and then they kind of do what they're meant to do. And then they put – and you do see it and you hear these stories where eventually someone leaves who's been difficult and the rest of the team – you know, come around and go, I think,
relieved. Oh, the worst thing that can happen, the worst thing that can happen is that the person stays and that the good people
leave.
But I think there is a lot, like in the legal side, there's a lot of kind of perceptions about what you're allowed to do and not allowed to do, I think, which are probably wrong. I think a lot of business owners that I deal with are sort of frightened to manage, to actively kind of manage their poor performers or the team that are the difficult, especially when you're dealing with things like if their sales figures are low, you can say, okay, your sales figures are low, that's sort of easy. But if, you know, you're just prickly and nobody wants to deal with you, which is a real problem, especially in a small team, but even in a big team, what do you do if the person's prickly? How do you manage that? Can you, you know, and I think a lot of, certainly the perception is, particularly in government or in very large organisations, that there's a whole bunch of deadwood sitting around that are just holding on and that the management are too frightened or too incompetent to get rid of.
Well, they're the ones that know all the rules too.
Yeah, and they might have been there for 20 years and they sort of know how to manipulate things, or they know the rules, so they're, you know, dare I say it, you know, they're a union, you know, they're strong on the union or whatever. So I know there can be there can be issues around that. You know, but I think there's probably a few tips that I can give you. Like you've got to know as an employer the difference, the main thing is the difference between redundancy and poor performance. I have a lot of clients.
Sorry, let's just back that up. I think the first thing they need to do is ring their lawyer.
ring this guy, right? He knows a few things and he'll sort them out.
Let's clear that up. Ring your lawyer and then now you go through your list of the differences.
Sign his engagement letter, pay him lots of money. Very important, but, you know, a lot of what I hear probably the most commonly from clients in this area is they say, I don't like dealing with so-and-so, you know, they're a pain, and so I'm going to make them redundant. You go, that is like, I can see why you'd want to do that, but that's actually wrong in law. So redundant is where there's nobody doing their job anymore. Their role does not exist. It's not done by anybody.
Yes.
So if you don't like someone or someone's not performing or whatever it is, and you make them redundant, you've immediately breached the law, right? It's not a redundancy. It's possibly a dismissal for for poor performance, which could be legal. But if you do it as a redundancy and it's not a real redundancy, then it will be illegal and you'll be done for unfair dismissal, right? So I think a lot of the time people are worried about unfair dismissal, so they go, oh, I'll just make them redundant. And that's the worst thing you can do. You've got to kind of identify, if you want to get rid of someone, are they redundant or are they a poor performer and have you given them the right
one? And how do you manage them through that poor performance to get to the point? Because normally what, that's 3 to 6 months to get a poor performer out?
There's not a set a time period, but certainly one of the things that people often don't do is don't put anything in writing. They have a bunch of performance meetings, but they don't put it in writing, and they should. Yeah. If you want some guidance on it, actually, that's quite helpful without ringing your lawyer or spending any money.
Wrong comment.
Yeah, you can go to Torres Legal website, obviously, because I mean, material on there under employment and safety. But you can also go to the Fair Work Small Business Dismissal Code. So that's Google that, the Fair Work Small Business Dismissal Code. It's specifically for employees, for businesses that employ less than 15 people.
Yeah, right.
So if you follow that and you employ less than 15 people, that's a factor that'll be in your favour in an unfair dismissal. But even if you've got more than 15 people, it sets out the kind of basic parameters of what you need to do if you're going to dismiss someone.
Yep.
And, you know, if you sort of follow and basically just tick the boxes, then you're going to be in pretty good shape.
But I do think the point that you made before is that sometimes there's conversations. You actually, if you've had a conversation with someone, you need to back it up with either a file note or an email to that individual that says, this is what we discussed and these are our action items and these are our expectations. So it's very clear from an audit trail, because that's where people do get unstuck and they're like, oh, bugger it, just piss them off. And like, well, it's sort of, some people will say, yep, whatever. Or you just pay them out, okay. But even then, you can still get someone that will come back. Or, you know, if they're vindictive, they go, all right, I'm not going to do anything. But then they start contacting customers or...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They can lob a few grenades. Yeah. Like, it can get pretty nasty, some of these scenarios for people.
Yeah, well, I probably, classic lawyer, just jumped straight into how do you dismiss them, you know, make them redundant, terminate them. But, you know, a lot of the time you'd like to, if you can, bring them back into the fold, or you'd like to, you know, actually manage them positively, put them on a performance improvement plan or just get them to get somebody to take them under their wing and bring them on board. Because, you know, in this labour market, you know, finding replacement employees is not easy. And, you know, however you get, whether you get rid of them, you know, and you get done for unfair dismissal or you don't, irrespective, you're still going to be down that employee.
Yeah, but sometimes this is where the discussion comes into it, where you turn around and say, am I better to keep the bad apple in the fold, or are we better to get rid of them and just have to offload some of that work to some other people inside the organisation? Now, sometimes you can do that and say, right, I knew this person was bad, we've got rid of that person. Yep. Now, the salary that you may have been paying to that person, you say, well, I'm not going to replace them, but I'm going to allocate extra work to a number of people, like, and this is where it depends upon the role that they've got, and I'm going to pay you a little bit more to do that. Yeah, sometimes the team can go, one, thank goodness you got rid of them, and two, we're happy to take on the extra work because we were basically doing the work for them or fixing up the work that they would do that was wrong, so we were no better off. Now you've turned around and said, we're still getting the work done, probably more efficiently. Yeah. And, it's costing the business the same amount of money, but people are much happier and they're getting it done as a team in a much better way.
We hear over and over again when people get rid of someone that they were struggling with, over and over again that the team and the owner is a sigh of relief, right? We had someone recently get rid of their chief executive officer, right, which is a pretty senior employee. And they were, you know, they were struggling with them for some years, and the CEO had been with them for many years, and it was a family business, and the CEO was not a family member, and you know, they relied on him a lot, but when he was gone, all this stuff came to the fore. People were relieved. There was all sorts of problems that hadn't been addressed that were suddenly being addressed, and the business now, it's actually the new CEO is a family member, as it happens, but very competent. And the business is running like a dream. The CEO had been holding them back for years and they didn't really know it. And, you know, it was making them all upset and causing, you know, health issues and so on, and stress. But almost always when the difficult person leaves, everybody's happier. You know, we see it from the client. It's very rare they go, oh, you know, we got rid of X and Y and, you know, gee, we missed their skills or whatever. It's usually that the team are happier. And so And normally when you look back on it, people are too slow to act.
Yep.
And probably myself included, I've had difficult employees in the past. And looking back, I go, look, I probably should have addressed that more assertively, more quickly. And you leave it and it festers and it gets worse and people get cranky. And then when that person's gone, you actually talk to the rest of them and they say, oh, yeah, that person was doing this and that to me that they didn't tell you when that person was around.
That's the high, slow, fire, fast mentality, isn't it?
Yes, well, right. Yeah, well, no, I hadn't heard of that until sort of relatively recently. Yeah, and I think
but also when you're trying to hire in someone,
yeah,
there's a lot of interesting dialogue around, you know, the whole interview process and for some people to do a trial half day or something inside the business.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not just the CEO or the MD or whoever is the role of the management that's looking to employ that person, but you actually get the team to interview the person as well on multiple touch points. Yeah. And people go, oh, that's crazy. Why should we do that? Well, the cost of putting a person on is so high if they're there for 3 or 6 months. Spending some of those proceeds that you would have allocated up front to get people to go, yep. And look, I hear of businesses where they talk about, you know, that the most senior person says, no, we definitely want Alex, right? Yep. I reckon he's the right man for the job. But someone else in the team just says, I don't know what it is. It's just something about him I don't like. Now, someone else said, no, I'm with Dave. I reckon he's good and this and that. Yeah. But it becomes a decision that says as the team grows, and look, again, this is in a smaller business versus a large
business.
But you turn around and if everyone is not a yes, it's a no. Now, that's a big call to do, but if you're trying to nurture that culture inside your organization, then to bring one person into a small team that's a little bit of left field and they're not going to fit in, it makes it really, really hard. So that's, you know, for some people, that's a really clever way to do it. It's either all in or not at all.
Yeah, well, that's it. I hadn't heard of that. And actually, I'm thinking back to a time when we as a team employed someone and we had one person in the team say, I don't really, there's something about the cut of her, jib that I don't like. And I remember saying, well, what is the details of that? Can you sort of explain that a bit more? And she couldn't. And I thought, well, that's not really good enough. You can't, you know, knock someone off from a new job that everyone sort of likes on the basis that, you know, you kind of got this amorphous feeling. Mm. But as it turned out, they didn't fit in very well. So maybe they were right, maybe they weren't, hard to know, but it didn't occur to me at the time to say, look, it's everybody. And I thought, if this guy makes the decision, you know, and ultimately I'd listen to people's input, but they sort of need to have objective reasons.
But see, that's the point. So part of it is if you're I've got to make the decision because I'm signing the final check every month, but ultimately in the end, that person may not really work with you that much.
No, right. Yeah, absolutely.
And so, you know, this is where it comes back to the team that sort of says yay or nay, because they're the ones that's got to grow and will they be more efficient? Yeah. So it's a real – look, I just think managing any difficult employee, of the topic for today, is a challenge because it's not just, you know, the interpersonal arrangements. It's the legal compliance work that fits around it.
Yeah.
What happens to the business if you've won a big contract or you've got a lot of work on at the time? Are you more focused on the delivery? And is that then, do you know what I mean? There's a lot of moving parts when you try and deal with people. And also I think, I mean, not that I want to open up this scar again, but COVID and this work from home and coming back into the office and how some people are, you know, they don't want to do it and others do and why can't we all be? That has also, you know, I think added an element of complexity in that, you know, some people are, that they're happy for their team to work a couple of days a week at home, but it's when everyone comes in on different days. There's never a team cohesion. Or some people are like, I like working in a team. Like I either live on my own or I live in a house that, you know, is not very social. I kind of like to come to work because there's people around me and I enjoy the time there. Yeah. So I think that's also, you know, it's difficult when someone says, oh, I like working from home and can't I just sit on Zoom and we talk? It's like, really, that doesn't kind of always
work. Yeah, it depends very much on the job. Absolutely. We've just completed our reviews this year. And, you know, I've had one person say, I would like to work from home all the time. And I'd like everyone to work from home all the time. And I've had another person say, I would like to come into the office full time. And I've had another person say, I would like to work some days in, some days out. And I'm happy to, if, you know, whatever people can do to make their job and life easier doesn't bother me.
And if they're being productive and they're doing what you've asked them to do, like, I'm with you.
Yeah, but if I was to, you know, if the person who wants to come in all the time, if no one is in the office, it's no point in them coming in. So, you know, it's obviously, I mean, it's up to me as the kind of leader to make a decision that suits the business and suits everyone.
So if someone wants to come in, why would you not let them come in?
Oh, they can. Yeah, they can. But I'm saying they want to come in to see all the other people. And if nobody else is there, there's no point, right? So I'd have to sort of effectively force at least some people in some days.
Well, because this is the challenge that you have, is someone saying, you know, work is, as much as I enjoy the work, it's also this social aspect that if someone and not enough people are inside an office or in your, you know, you might be in a shared office facility and that's okay, but you run the risk of losing that person then too, because they're like, you know, it's just not ticking all the boxes for me. I like the work and I like the people, but I'm not getting the interaction that I would normally want to get a hold of.
Yeah. So this managing a business apparently turns out quite hard.
Sipping pina coladas and just, rubbing your feet up the whole time.
But I think that managing a difficult employee is probably the hardest thing you'll do in a business. And it's something, you know, naturally none of us like conflict. We don't seek it. And I think the reality is, as a business manager, you need to be able, as in a business owner, you need to be able to sit with conflict comfortably, and you need to be able to address those things head on. And I'm the first to admit I haven't done that in the past, and I've suffered for it, you know, and the more experience I have dealing with difficult employees for clients, which we do as a service, you know, the more I realise you got to get in early and you got to get in aggressively. And, you know, and I think taking action and getting rid of someone is almost always a better outcome, however the legalities pan out or whatever, but it's almost always better than struggling on with someone who's no good and who can be just toxic for the team.
But there's an interesting, I saw an interesting post from Simon Sinek this morning on LinkedIn.
Oh, yeah. Is this about trust?
Well, not so much trust. This particular one is very much around, and he was just talking about having difficult conversations.
This
is both personal and business, but it's like, you know, people, they want to avoid the difficult conversation, but he just the way he positioned it was that he was just saying, you know, you might need to have this conversation with someone, and you know, you can kind of go up to them and say, look, this is going to be a difficult conversation for me. Just be patient with me, just allow me, and let's kind of talk it out. I think we've got a good relationship and I want to continue our relationship to develop, but there's just something that's cropped up that I really want to raise with you. You know, is that okay? Or is there a time that I can do it? Don't just land it on them. It's like, all right, look, can you come back to me in an hour and I would have finished something and we can sit down and have this conversation? And he said, it is. You've really got to kind of lean into it and just work your way through it, because he said there's too many occasions where you will get it where something annoys you but you don't nip it in the bud at the time. And then, it continues to fester. And they are. Those difficult conversations are bloody hard to have. But he said the more you do it, the better you get at it. But a lot of the time, the other party that you're talking to will counter that and say, well, there are certain things that you do that annoy me. Can I change my behaviour? Like, it's not always a one-way street. And that might be some of these issues with the difficult employees. Sometimes you don't always know what's going on, you know, in their space. You know, you've employed them to do something, they ticked all the boxes when they came in, but circumstances for people change really quickly. And that's a really hard thing. And it's, you know, as an employer, you kind of go, oh my God, I'm not a counseling service, but it's hard. But it was just interesting. It was just an interesting topic that he raised about, you know, having difficult conversations with people, because we've had a lot of this time, especially when it's face to face. We've had a lot of time away. Like, people have, you know, it's video conference or it's phone call or, you know, there's a lot of people that are just very uncomfortable still about going out and mixing with people and, you know, having to eyeball someone. And you've got to push yourself to get through to get into some of that. It's bloody hard.
Yeah, well, related to that, I think something I've noticed is you can have a difficult conversation with someone, but you can't, I think it's ambitious to expect that you would have one conversation with someone and fix all the problems.
Correct.
You know, the reality is people sort of need to be brought along on a journey. Yep. And if you are going to manage someone, you know, to help them improve or to get on better with everyone or whatever, that you've got to kind of do it a little bit, you know, like improve a little area and get a little bit more agreement, a little bit more agreement over time. You're not going to sort of sit down there going to go, oh, I didn't realise I've just not got to be not rude to people. Okay, well, I'll stop that and problem solved. I have had actually one time where I had that discussion with someone and the light switched on and they did stop doing something that was upsetting another employee straight away and never did it again.
Because sometimes people just don't realise. To them, it's a normal behaviour. Yeah. They're like, well, we all speak like that or react like that when something happens. It's not here, that's offending. And that's a really difficult one because you can say something amongst your own peer group and they're all okay. You go into a different environment, it's like, whoa, you can't say that.
Political
correctness.
Partly the training of being a lawyer and whatever tend to be direct and technical. So you say use the right word and say something directly. And I know my staff have sometimes come a long way and gone, well, you were sort of terrorising me. And I say, terrorising?
Let you really got me started, yes.
But, you know, that kind of directness or that harshness, if you like, and I mean, I deal with conflict, you know, in litigation and whatever, and so, you know, I don't see it as a high conflict situation, but they might, you know. It certainly is a two-way street. You've got to kind of reflect on what you do. But at the end of the day, I think you've got to say, well, I am still the business owner or the business manager and I need to make decisions.
Yep.
And you can't be paralysed by kind of self-reflection. You need to make a decision and stick with it. And if you know, somebody's causing trouble for the team, I think you need to address it.
Well, that comes back, you know, sometimes there's a small sacrifice for the greater good.
Yeah, that's right.
It has to be.
And at the end of the day, the business is about, you know, the business being successful, right, and the people are there to contribute to that. Yep. So if they're not contributing to it, you've got to kind of address it. It's not like you're not there for the sake of your employees.
Well, you're not a charity.
You know, the employees are supposed to help. Yeah, the employees are supposed to help the business achieve whatever the business goals are.
And they're compensated for that.
Right, yeah. So you shouldn't be worried about taking action. And I think sometimes people are a bit worried, particularly about the legal consequences, and they're not as bad as you might think.
You've got to come back, seek some advice.
Right.
And do it early. There's a lot of free resources.
Yeah.
Like there is the Fair Work Commission and all of those places. There is places that you can go to that you can seek some self-help. But I would highly recommend if you're in a difficult position, you know, go seek out an employment lawyer to work out what your options might be rather than letting it fester to such an extent that you are being, you know, someone's putting forward an unfair
dismissal claim. Or that you're just putting up with it because you feel you have to. I mean, if you've made the decision that you want someone gone or that you play, you know, and be, that they don't fit in or whatever, then you can get some advice, take the right steps, go through the right steps, document them properly, and, you know, it should be apples as long as, you know, you've got a legitimate reason, you're not just bullying someone, then, you know, you get the right advice and you can take action. And, you know, as I say, at the end of the day, it's your business, you own it or, you know, you're managing it and you need to be able to kind of manage the workforce appropriately and don't be scared to, because if you are, I've just seen people suffer, their marriage suffers, their home life suffers, all because they're kind of a bit of a slave to the people they work with and, you know, it shouldn't happen.
Well, I think that's a great one to close out on. So today I'd like to thank Alex Martin from Taurus Legal Management. He can be contacted via LinkedIn at Alex Martin or via the website tauruslawyers.com.au.
You can just call me Alex Lawyer. That'll be fine. I think that's my Instagram handle. It's Alex Lawyer. It used to be Al Good Times. And I thought, oh, that's not very professional.
No, it's not very professional. See what I'm dealing with here, people?
Yeah, that's right. So I'd like to thank David Murdoch, the wealth activist from Paxton Bridge. And you can contact him at David Murdoch on LinkedIn or from paxtonbridge.com.
Beautiful. Thank you, Alex. Once again, bit of banter and a bit of fun. So thank you for that. And we'll catch everyone next time. Cheers.
Catch you next time.